There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Book of the Week, what you should be reading.
Jetson Begas is the author of 9 blockbuster books, including 7 novels, 5 Point Someone, One Night at the Call Center, The 3 Mistakes of My Life, 2 States, Revolution 2020, Half Girlfriend, and One Indian Girl. He's also responsible for 2 non-fiction titles, What Young India Wants and Making India Awesome. His books have remained bestsellers since their release, with 4 out of his 5 novels being adapted into successful Bollywood films. Jetson has been called the biggest-selling English language novelist in India's history by the New York Times and named amongst the 100 most influential people in the world by Time magazine. He currently writes columns for leading English and Hindi newspapers, focusing on youth and national development issues. He's also a motivational speaker and screenplay writer.
A little bit of information there about Chetan Bhagat, the author of the book that we are reviewing now, One Indian Girl. He is coming to the Literature Festival this year. You can already buy tickets to his session, even if you aren't a Foundation friend. His is one of the sessions that went on sale a little bit earlier. Now, Meredith, you actually used to live in India, didn't you?
I did.
So this is quite close to home.
It is. Well, home being, I'm originally from Australia, but I lived in India for almost 2 years in Chennai with my family. And that's where I came across this fabulous author, and also all the films that have been adapted to his books. The Three Idiots is fantastic, and the soundtrack to it is brilliant. In fact, I was going to suggest playing the title soundtrack from that, but All Is Well, but I don't think there's enough time.
Probably not.
No, maybe sing it another time. But yeah, no, he's fantastic. So I was exposed to his work whilst living in India, and it's very contemporary, it's modern. This latest book of his, One Indian Girl, I'll just read you the blurb on the back. It says, "Hi, I'm Radhika Mehta, and I'm getting married this week. I work at Goldman Sachs, an investment bank. Thank you for reading my story. However, let me warn you, you may not like me too much. 1, I make a lot of money. 2, I have an opinion on everything. 3, I have had a boyfriend before. Okay, maybe 2. Now, if I was a guy, you would be okay with all of this. But since I'm a girl, these 3 things don't really make me too likeable, do they?" And that's pretty much, well, it doesn't really tell you much what the story is about. But what it is about, shall I go into it now?
Please do.
The big reveal. Well, I won't reveal too much, of course. But no, it brings up a lot of things. And this is what I like about his writing. It writes about modern India, because India is an incredible, incredible country, and you're dealing with fantastic old traditional values, which deal with a mass population of different castes, different religions, and then you've got the modern middle class Indians emerging who are being educated, striving to make more, to make India great. And they're torn between the traditional values and the modern values, and especially the Western values that come in, which is about, you know, having a love marriage as opposed to an arranged marriage. And so it brings in these sorts of, I suppose, sometimes can be dilemmas for people. Sometimes it's a choice, sometimes it's not a choice. And that's what he deals with. He deals with, you know, the conflict of the modern Indian dealing with the traditional Indian, and how you can make peace with the two. So appeasing your parents, who may hold the traditional values, more than likely, and then for your peers who may, you know, get a job in New York once they've graduated from their college degree, and then are exposed to, you know, New York way of life, which is, you know, fast money, fast people, fast food, you know, all those things which you don't have back in India. And so it's trying to literally marry the two worlds. And that's what I think he does a fantastic job of, just exposing you to what it's like for these people, and also how to cope with it, and how to deal with it, and how to get back to your true values. And this is what this book deals with. It's this girl who's had fantastic success, great success with what she does. She's taken up to work at a fantastic position in New York. She earns, you know, her first year $350,000, which is just huge. You know, her bonus was maybe it was a bit less than that. But like, her bonus was 170,000, and it was unbelievable, the amount. And it's just trying to reconcile that value of money compared to what it means back in India, and trying to relate that. And also her value too. Her parents don't see, you know, don't earn too much, don't become too successful, because then you won't be able to get married, because no man will want to marry you if you're earning more than him. And so, yeah, it's really hard and really frustrating. And I get it from a Westerner. I get it. But it's also very hard to be, you know, a woman of the world, a feminist, if you want to call it. But as he points out, it's not so much being a feminist, it's being about a humanitarian. And it's about what's right for men and women and for people to get on together.
I mean, it's interesting, the research that he did for this book. I don't know if you're aware of it, but he went and he spoke to 100 women. So they were all relations of his. And he tried to get into the heads or into the souls of women. Do you think he succeeded in doing that?
I did think of that, because at the beginning when he said that, you know, he interviewed hundreds of women for this book, initially when I started reading this book, I thought, oh, no, I, you're right, I don't like this character. I do not like her. And I wonder if I don't like her because it's written from a male's perspective, so it doesn't have the layers of a female.
And that, I don't know. I mean, you actually feel that. So you do feel initially, it is a male voice.
Initially, right at the very beginning. But I think that's also her character as well. And then I'm not aware of it at all. And then I get more of a feel for it. Then more of her personality comes out and she's more dimensional. Yes, you'd like to put your hand up.
We need to leave it there just very briefly. When we come back, we'll be talking about One Indian Girl by Chetan Bhagat a little bit more. And also, His Mind Changed Our World, Her Love Changed His. That is the tagline for Travelling to Infinity by Jane Hawking, who is coming to Dubai. And we're talking about that book as well. Stay tuned.
From Jojo Moyes to Omar Gabash, we've got it covered. Talking of books, here on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Hi there, welcome back to the show. Annabelle here with James Mullen, my wonderful co-host.
Yay.
Yay.
He is wonderful.
He is wonderful, yes. Meredith Chipperton, you just heard there, who is our guest, our star reviewer today. Reviewing.
Ta-da!
Yes, with sound effects as well. She's got her Barry White voice on because she's not feeling very well. Oh, yeah. It does work really well on the radio. You should be sick more often.
Go right up to the microphone.
We're talking about One Indian... See, yeah, the danger is of doing that.
I know.
One Indian Girl by Chetan Bhagat is the book that you've just been reviewing. Now, before we wrap up the conversation on that and move on to Jane Hawking's wonderful Travelling to Infinity, who would you recommend Chetan Bhagat's One Indian Girl to? I mean, it's quite a short read. It's a quick read, isn't it?
It's a very quick read, very easy read. It's a book that you could read on the train, in the bath. It's, you know, pick it up anytime. The storyline just follows really easily. And actually, I couldn't actually put it down. I really wanted to find out, well, hang on, okay, so what is she going to do? You know, so it did keep me really intrigued. Who's it for? I don't know. If you want something, a bit of an insight into Indian culture, if you're not of Indian background, and you want an insight into Indian culture, and also especially the young emerging market coming from India, the middle class that are now working in Western countries, just their backstory, what it's like for them. You know, you might be sitting opposite them in IT and they're doing a fantastic job, but, you know, how did they get there? You know, what did they have to overcome to suddenly be transported into an IT building in the Western country? It's pretty extreme.
One thing I was wondering was, because we know that the protagonist, Radhika, she basically is completely outlawed. She's successful. She knows what she wants in life. She's not afraid to go out and, well, sort of.
Yeah.
But she's at odds with more traditional Indian society. Now, I wonder, does she change her mind throughout the novel? How clear is she on what she wants? Is she clearer at the end of the book? How does her character change?
Look, I think with anyone who's successful with their business in terms of, she's in banking.
Yeah.
So she's got a very sharp clinical mind, very cut and dry, and very, very good with that. But of course, when it comes to matters of the heart, emotional, you know, that's tied up with all sorts of other things about, you know, feeling worthy, feeling good enough. You know, she never felt, she was of a wheatish complexion as opposed to being more white or darker skin, which is not favoured apparently in India when you want to be married off. So all these things, these negative connotations, she's got in her head about her own perception of herself. So does she become clearer towards the end? Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And not the way I thought she would.
Okay, so there's a little bit of a surprise in
there. Yeah, there was actually. I was really surprised.
Wasn't what you expected.
No, and I wasn't sure if I liked it, but then I thought, actually, no, I get it. I'll accept that one.
Well, the author, Chetan Bhagat, is coming to the festival in March, and you're actually going to be interviewing him for the festival.
I'm so excited about that.
Can you share with us one question that you are dying to ask him?
Oh, gosh. Oh, no.
See, this is where I test whether the moderators have done their homework.
Yeah, yeah, good on you. I have read his book. Oh, I've read quite a few of his books. Look, I actually would like to know, now that he's had so many of his books translated into films, does he now write with that imagery in his mind of how this would be portrayed in a film? Because I see in this book, One Indian Girl, instant film, especially on this beautiful exotic island that they talk about where they go to. And so I wonder if that's now sort of influenced his writing, that where he depicts the location and the dynamic of the people and...
That's a great question.
It's interesting because one of the criticisms of the book I've seen in one of the reviews was exactly that point, was that it reads like Bollywood script writing. So they had Punjabi wedding, check. Comedy sequence with bumbling aunties, check. Exotic beach, check. Locations in New York, Hong Kong and London, check, check, check.
Wow, I didn't read that review.
Yes, so that's one of the lines you could put to him.
But I do think that sometimes these clichés are clichés because they are true to a lot of these people's
lives.
Because
that's what makes it work, too.
Yeah. So I liked your question there for Chetan about
goodness,
the film.
I passed.
Yay!
Passed. Oh.
For now.
Uh-oh.
But it brings us very nicely into the next book that we need to talk about because, of course, we're talking about Travelling to Infinity by Jane Hawking, which is her memoir of her life with Stephen, obviously Stephen Hawking, who wrote A Brief History of Time. And that was turned into the most beautiful film called The Theory of Everything, starring Eddie Redmayne and Felicity Jones. Here's a little bit of information about Jane before we crack on with our review of the book.
Book of the Week, what you should be reading.
Jane Hawking penned a powerful memoir that lets us into her extraordinary marriage with Stephen Hawking. They were together when his academic record soared and his body was collapsing as it suffered from motor neuron disease. Her candid account of trying to balance her then husband's 24-hour care with the needs of their growing family has inspired readers, especially those who are dealing with family illness. At times moving, at times funny, the entirety of the book is an honest take on confronting trials in a marriage and keeping optimistic no matter where it leads.
So Travelling to Infinity, Meredith, first impressions.
My first impressions of Travelling to Infinity, wow, what a life, my goodness me. I thought she told her story with so much grace and, oh my gosh, so much respect towards Stephen Hawking's, which is what it's about, being married to him and meeting him. Mm. And she has so much respect for him too, but I don't even know where to start. Just the troubles with having to... I mean, they're both educated. They're both intellectuals. And she obviously has to put her PhD and her thesis on the back burner in order for Stephen to shine and to, you know, make a career of what he does. And she does not hold that against him at all. At any point does she ever feel resentful towards him. She feels neglected at times, and not just from Stephen, but also from the institutions. Cambridge, it's very much a male-dominated society, and wives and mothers are perceived as, you know, just background noise. And are not given any respect, even if they are educated themselves and have a very, very highly valued opinion on anything. They're still kept in the background. So there's lots of issues. Issues about dealing with someone who has a disability, not just for themselves personally, but also in society. How she made so many changes, and they tried to make so many changes to get infrastructure of buildings, of concert halls, theatres, universities to change so that they could adapt accessibility for people with disabilities, and even now it's still very, very hard to get a building to have some sort of infrastructure put in to accommodate a wheelchair. So it's, you know, they were dealing with so many things on so many different levels. I mean, how did you find it, Annabelle?
I was just overwhelmed this. It's quite a hefty book. There is a lot in it. She covers a lot of ground. And it just is one of those books where each paragraph is just condensed with so much. And I think what I took away from it was, you know, how does one person cope with all this? How is it that she has managed to cope with all of this? And Stephen as well, obviously, he was coping with ALS. But the carer's point of view, I think, is one that is really interesting. And it's not one that we talk about enough. In all walks of life, really.
No.
James, what's been your experience of this story? Have you seen the film?
Yeah, I mean, I've seen the film, and I think what's striking for anybody that's seen the film is the difference between the film and the book, what actually happened in sort of key scenes.
Yeah.
So if you take, for instance, their breakup in the movie is presented as this sort of tear-stained, mutually respectful situation, whereas in fact, what happened was that he sent her a letter. That's how Stephen Hawking broke up with his wife. He sent her a letter. But that really wouldn't do well in the Hollywood version of things. And there are a number of instances of that. There's quite a difference between the book and the movie. And if you've seen the movie, you will see those differences. They'll come at you reading this book.
Speaking of differences between the film and the movie, I was interested to know what Jane actually thought, because, you know, she's still with us. She's written this book. It's been turned. Her life has been put on a screen. What does the woman at the heart of this think about it? And this is what she had to say about what she loved the most about the film.
Well, definitely our meeting. That was perhaps one of the most important moments in my life. The diagnosis of Stephen's illness. I was not actually there at the time, but I had a strong visual image of how it must have been. And I think that comes across in the film very powerfully. And then, of course, our wedding and the shots of Felicity and Eddie looking just like Stephen and me. It's just how it was all those years ago.
So that's Jane Hawking there talking about moments.
She sounded pleased.
Yeah, I think she did love the film. I think Stephen liked the way that he was portrayed as well by Eddie Redmayne.
I'm sure he would have.
There's some really funny videos
of
Eddie Redmayne talking about meeting Stephen Hawking and being a complete fanboy about it and not knowing what to say because obviously he's Stephen Hawking. But one of my favourite ways of summing up this book is actually, I think there's a quote on the back from the Times on Sunday or something that says that Stephen Hawking thought in about 11 dimensions and Jane Hawking had to learn to love in just as many, if not
in
more,
several, yes.
In several.
That's right.
I think that's a beautiful way of putting it, having to learn to love in several dimensions.
Absolutely. I mean, she had to sort of cover everything. I don't know how she did it. I don't know where she found the time to do everything because there wasn't a lot of infrastructure. They didn't have a lot of money either. I mean, you would thought with all these grants or, you know, with acknowledgements and medals and certifications of how successful he was, that, you know, people would be coming in with a lot of aid and help. But there was none, very little, very, very little until towards the end. So it's they really, really struggled. I mean, she had a lot of help from her family. Stephen's family, now that's an interesting one. I like the section in the book where it describes Stephen's mother favoured intelligence over integrity. So, yes, very much so, which kind of actually depicted the whole sort of idea of what their family was like. They were a little bit dysfunctional from where she explains it. Interestingly enough, apparently the family didn't go along to see the film. That's what I've just read somewhere in the reviews. But, yeah, so not entirely favourable about Stephen's family. They weren't very supportive of Stephen. They wouldn't really acknowledge the fact of how much work and help he needed.
Right.
And they weren't really willing to accommodate around it and expected her to do everything, which she did. She, you know, looked after the kids, looked after Stephen. And by looking after Stephen, it literally meant helping him dress, carrying with the chair, pushing it around, you know, cutting up the morsels of food, feeding him, and he would have these awful, awful choking fits, which led to him having, what's it called, a trichectomy?
Tracheotomy.
That's the word. Well done. And hence, that's why he got the voice box thing put in. But prior to that, because anything that went down his throat would aggravate it and have these huge coughing fits where he would be gasping for breath and fearful of his life. So it was really traumatic for them to be experiencing all of that. I just wanted to just sort of point out another thing, that there is, you know, that saying behind every great man there is a, you know, great woman, person, whatever it may be. And I think that's what she's very humble in this book because she doesn't really blow her own horn much at all in terms of, you know, how hard things really were. She does tell you, but never woe is me. And she never really got much acknowledgement about the work that she did. And she did say that one person finally did notice, and they thought, this person said to her, there must be someone equally courageous behind him, or he simply would not be there. Which is when, after he presented something on stage, which is very true, he would not have got as far as he did if he did not have that physical, emotional support.
We are going to have to leave it there. That was Meredith Chipperton talking about Travelling to Infinity by Jane Hawking. Also talking about One Indian Girl by Chetan Bhagat earlier. We will be back with our little chat about Around Ireland with a Fridge, one of those crazy travel stories that almost sounds too weird to be true. Stay tuned.
From Stephen King to Madhul Jaffrey, Anthony Horowitz to Kevin Kwan, this is Talking of Books.
On Dubai i103.8.
Hey, welcome back to Talking of Books. Annabelle and James here with you. We're about to talk about something quite close to your heart, James. We're talking about Around Ireland with a Fridge by Tony Hawkes, who is coming to the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature. Tell us why we should be reading this book.
It's funny, actually, because I completely resisted going anywhere near this book until it was forced upon me by Talking of Books.
You're welcome.
It was one of those things where I looked at it and I went, bit of a stunt. He goes around Ireland with a Fridge, so what? And I thought, what could be remotely amusing about this? Now, I like Tony Hawkes. I don't have anything against him. I don't have anything against fridges. But it's the
good
it's the,
to know.
It's the combination of Fridge, Hawks, and Ireland. I just didn't get. But what I would say to all people is kick against your prejudice, have a go, and what you will be rewarded with is a gem of a book. It is an incredibly funny and quite moving book in parts as well. And really, what it is what it says in the tin. Tony Hawkes, so why did he go round Ireland with a fridge? Well, he had visited Ireland sort of 10 years prior to this, and he had seen, when he was driving with his friend to Cavan, which is in the north of the country, he looked out and he saw there was a guy standing by the side of the road, hitching, with a fridge. And he said to his Irish friend, he said, what's going on there? And the Irish guy goes, well, that's the sort of thing that happens here. You know, people just do this sort of stuff. Thought nothing of it. Then he was back in London. He was at a party, and he talked about this, and he said, hey, I saw this, and people completely disbelieved him. They said, this is just rubbish. This sort of stuff doesn't happen. He woke up the next morning, and he found that he'd signed a piece of paper. His friend had issued this contract or this bet that he should go around the whole of Ireland with a fridge in a month, and he had signed this. So he thought, right, okay, well, I've signed the contract. I need to do it. And that's what he does. He gets a little fridge.
How big?
It was.
And how,
like,
does he carry it?
Like about, you know, a very 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 small fridge. So about, you know, 2 feet sort of square around. Okay. That one of those fridges. But he has his little trolley. So he has a trolley that he takes with him as well. And the big thing about this was that he actually made contact early on. He made a very good move. He got in touch with the radio station. That's always a good move, isn't it, to get in touch with the radio station. And this guy called Jerry Ryan, who at the time was the superstar DJ in Ireland, and he took to this. So he took to this idea. So when he was leaving the first day, he spoke to him and told him what he was doing. And then every single day, he spoke to Jerry Ryan as he went round the country. And it was just a succession of adventures with him and his fridge. So people knew that he was at a particular spot. Sometimes they would rush to get to him, to take him, so that they could actually drive him that day to a particular spot.
Tony Hawkes, Fridge Man. Yeah. Here's a little bit more about the guy who wrote this book and came up with this crazy stunt.
Book of the Week, what you should be reading.
Tony Hawkes is the author of the bestseller Round Ireland with a Fridge, the story of his absurd quest to hitch round the circumference of Ireland within a month with a fridge. The book has been adapted for radio and television and has spawned the sequel Once More Into the Fridge. His other books include Playing the Moldovians at Tennis, One Hit Wonderland, A Piano in the Pyrenees, and Once Upon a Time in the West Country. His TEDx talk, Lessons from the Fridge, address the common theme of these books, that silly things can become great things in inspiring happiness and creativity. On TV, he's appeared on popular UK shows and comedy programmes.
There you go, that's Tony Hawkes. A little bit of information about there, about the guy who decided to go around Ireland with a fridge of all things. we actually have a little clip of him talking about why this worked in Ireland, and it wouldn't have worked anywhere else, would it, James?
I don't know. I mean, I think there are other countries where you get weird people, but Ireland has
can say that.
Yeah, there is a fairly large concentration of weirdness and odd people in Ireland.
I think Australia is pretty good for that. Yeah.
I think the people had to be a little bit wacky. You'll see what I mean here when you have a listen to this.
The fact of the matter is that once the Irish people had realised I'd spent more on the fridge than the bet was for, they simply couldn't do enough for me. I'd stumbled on the perfect place for my experiment. The Irish people embraced silly eccentricity. It was quite wonderful. And they wanted to humanise the fridge too. I think in this picture you can see that the fridge is on a bar stool. It wasn't to start with. It was on the floor. But and we were all talking and the landlord said, you can't leave it down on the floor now. Come on, put it up on the stool. Let it join in with everyone. And the little old fella, he was looking at the fridge for some time. And then he suddenly just went, ah, sure now, it's nice to see it out of context. And I finally ended up in a place called Sligo, and by this point I'd become a little bit well known with this journey, and I'd come into this pub. A bit of a party had developed and people were buying drinks and signing the fridge, and this man marched across the room to me and he said, Tony, I just want to thank you. And I said, why? He said, well, look at the faces of the people who are all around you. Look at the happiness that you and your fridge have created. He said that you and your fridge are spreading joy.
You and your fridge are spreading joy. I love that. It's nice seeing it out of context. I think that was my favourite line there.
Well, the best bit of it, I think, is where they take the fridge surfing.
Oh.
And they decided they were in this particular place, and there was a guy who was a surfer, and he said, you know, have you been surfing with the fridge yet? And he goes, no. He said, well, tomorrow morning we're going surfing with the fridge.
Right.
So they went down, they took the fridge, and they surfed with it, and there was a crowd of people. And he said when they put the fridge by itself, they just caught the perfect wave, and there was bedlam on the port. There were all these people cheering and screaming as the fridge was on top of the surfboard coming
that's
in.
Hilarious.
Fun stories from Round Island with a Fridge there by Tony Hawks, who's one of the authors at the upcoming Emirates Airline Festival of Literature. Speaking of the Literature Festival, we are joined on the phone by the festival director herself, Isabel Abul-Hul. Welcome to the show, Isabel. How are you doing?
I'm good, Annabelle and James. I've been listening in for most of the morning, apart from the odd coffee break, and it's been fantastic. You've had some wonderful guests and lots of 2018 festival authors. So it's been brilliant. I normally am sort of not able to listen in unless I make the effort. So that was really, really a lovely experience for me.
Thanks so much.
I'm so excited about 2018. You mentioned the book Travelling to Infinity, Jane Hawking. That one especially for me has a huge amount of interest because I was born and brought up in Cambridge, and a lot of my parents' friends were academics, and there is so much resonance in that, you know, why did they have to struggle so much? But actually academics, particularly sort of back then, were very poorly, well, not very poorly paid, but certainly there was no allowances. It was not in an age where people with disabilities were given sort of any special access or things like that. So I think it is an incredible story. And I think that Jane Hawking is the heroine in many, many ways for making, you know, for making it possible for Stephen to realize his dream and for the world to benefit from this incredible mind over the last, I don't know how many, 50 years probably.
Yeah, she is an inspirational woman. I can't wait to see her at the festival myself. Who else are you looking forward to? I know it's really hard to pick because there are so many great authors.
Yeah. Well, I'm so excited about Julie Totman, who you had on this morning. You know, animal training, I mean, we've had a variety of animals in the past, some of them trainable and some of them not. And I just think that's incredible because it takes an incredible amount of patience to train even domesticated pets. So I really want to go to that session. So that's one. Obviously, Julie Hawking. I'm really, really looking forward to His Excellency Zaki Nusseibeh's Year of Zaid, because 2018 has been declared the year of Zayed. Zaki Nusseibeh, I think, arrived in the UAE or certainly started working for the late His Highness Sheikh Zayed in 1968, the year that I arrived, and he also is he is a Cambridge graduate. So there's sort of some common threads running through that, and I can't think of anyone better to tell us some of the, you know, the rare moments that he spent with Sheikh Zayed. I think it's going to be a fantastic session. Of course, the one and only Ken Hom telling us about his stir-fried rice. I was going to say lighter, sorry.
Well, that too.
Yes, this, my stir-fried life, I think, will be brilliant. I mean, he's such a wonderful chef, cook, and someone who has sort of allowed us to, I suppose, cook Chinese food in its variety of forms so much better than the packets of my childhood when my mother thought that we would have Chinese food. And my mother was a very good cook, and she got these sort of little packets with dehydrated things. Chinese food it wasn't. So that one I have to go to in her memory, really. Eugene Rogan, The Fall of the Ottomans. Now, he is a very, very popular festival author. He's been twice before, and I'm sure James would second this.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, very much looking forward. He's top of my list at the moment.
Yes, and then in a similar vein, William Dalrymple with the Koh-i-Noor, the world's most infamous diamond, and also him in conversation with Shashi Tharoor. And I think those are the kind of sessions that you will kick yourself if you miss them, because it's in that moment. Jenny Murray talking about history in 21 women. You know, these are golden opportunities, but there's one golden opportunity that I hope no one who may have read or heard of the book. So one of the best-selling books in the world is The Shadow of the Wind by Carlos Ruiz Zafón. And as the festival team will know, we have invited Carlos Ruiz Zafón 9 times without too much success. But the 10th time we struck gold, and he will be at the 2018 Emirates Airline Festival of Literature. And I just cannot wait to meet him. That book changed so many things that I thought about writing. It was just a completely fresh, dark, gripping novel. And the latest, and I think it's the final in this series, will be published next year. So it is the best-selling book from a Spanish writer, whether it's in translation or in the original Spanish. And it is available in Arabic and English, which I'm delighted to say. But after Don Quixote, this is the next best-selling book. So I think we are so honoured to have him attend the festival next year. Or this year. Even this year. I'm doing what you do, Annabelle. I can't get into
it. It's difficult, isn't it?
We've said next year for such a long time. Yes, so those are a few of my... of course, I could not miss Omar Gabash and Tom Fletcher's session on digital diplomacy. I don't think the timing could be better for what we are seeing unfold across the world. It's just mind-blowing. I mean, I love Twitter, I love social media, but it's getting more and more gripping when we see the kind of things that are being posted on social media from heads of state. And I James, what do you feel? I mean, it's unbelievable sometimes.
Well, it's beyond the scope of fiction. I mean, it's like Mark Twain used to say, you know, fact will always beat fiction because fiction's got to make sense.
Yeah, you know? The latest thing about the U.S. embassy and all sorts of other things. And I mean, it's just you have to keep following it. It is you know, you can't sort of put it down and not actually get caught up in the whole conversation that's going on. So Tom Fletcher and Omar Gabash are both two young diplomats who have an awful lot to say on that, and I want to be in that room when they're talking about it, for sure.
We are honoured to be having all of these authors at the festival this year. See, I got it right that time. And we're honoured to have you on the show, Festival Director Isabel Abelhall, telling us about what you're looking forward to. Obviously, we're looking forward to absolutely everyone, but it's impossible for us to talk about all of them now. Thank you so much for chatting to us over the phone.
Okay, and enjoy the rest of the Saturday, won't you both?
Will
thank
do.
You.
Thank you,
you
Isabel.
Too. Bye.
Bye.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.